This is Time Signatures with Jim Irvin, a podcast and radio program presented by the Capital Area Blues Society in Lansing, Michigan. Most any contemporary musical style can trace its roots back to the blues. Time Signatures explores the blues and its musical connections with captivating interviews, lively discussions, and news from the world of the blues.
You know I'm crying, crying, baby, driving up and down these Michigan roads, yeah.
And now, here he is, your host, Jim Irvin.
Well, thank you so much, Parker, and welcome to Time Signatures. I am your host, Jim Irvin, and we are pleased to welcome once again Michael Rubin of the band King Falcon on the other end of our line. King Falcon recently released their debut self-titled album, and we are here for part two of the conversation. If you'd like to hear part one, simply go to lccconnect.edu and check out the Time Signatures page. Mike, as I was reading over your information, and I told you we were going to come back to the guitars, okay? I was impressed with the amazing collection that you've got of vintage guitars, one of a kind, most notably a 57 Strat that you state is intertwined with your personal history, connecting you to your grandfather's past and the melodies of Italy. Try to say that five times quickly. Now, you got my interest piqued. Tell me the story. I got to hear it.
Okay, so the story of this guitar goes back to the first gig that I ever played with James. This was still with the Canaries. We were very young, and it was in the parking lot of a church, which is the only gig that we could get, and we were not the right fit at all because we're doing, like, Black Sabbath covers and, like, Floyd sure. and, like not churchly music at all, but whatever. They gave us a gig, and it was kind of just a bunch of old Italian people there that were just – happy that something was going on and there was free food because it was the church, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, after we finished the set, this old guy comes up to me, and he's an old Italian guy, and his name was Filippo, and he's got a thick Italian accent, you know, like this, like he's off the boat. And he asked me, he's like, hey, I've got this really cool old guitar, maybe you want to come see it, let me know. So I said, okay. So the next day I go over to his house with my mom, right? We go together. I'm a kid, so like I have to bring my mom with me, obviously. We go into his house and he opens up the case and I see this beautiful, it's a 1957 Strat. Mm. It's been refinished, but it has the most flamey maple neck I have ever seen in my life. I mean, it just looks like the ocean. It's just, it has this beautiful grain, and it's just it's the word is chatoyance, which is a good word I learned.
Okay.
That's when you see the wood move kind of in the light as you turn it in your hands, that's what that's called. So it just had this beautiful figuring. I told him obviously I wanted to buy it, and he was like, great. It was a few thousand dollars, and I was a kid. I had maybe $400 on me that I got for Christmas. So mm-hmm. that wasn't going to happen because I couldn't afford it. And, you know, I'm a kid. My mom's not going to spend, I think it was like $4,000 or $5,000 on a guitar. Like, she's not going to spend that on a 12-year-old. And she shouldn't have, which I wouldn't have done that either. So we left, but it never left my mind. I never forgot that guitar because it just felt so right. And it was just such a beautiful guitar. So I think it was 9 years that went by. And in those 9 years, I had done a whole bunch of other things, you know, the Canaries. We had started up King Falcon, but it was kind of still pre-COVID, so it was still the beginning of King Falcon, like the first couple of months. So I called a buddy of mine, and he was telling me about another guitar, and I was like, you know, the only thing I've ever found locally was this 57 Strat. I never found any other guitars locally. Like, I found a bunch in the Midwest and a bunch in California, but not locally in New York because it's such a saturated market. I was like, let me call this old guy from 10 years ago. And let me see if, number one, if he's still alive, because he was like 80 something years old. And number two, if he has this guitar. So I called him and he didn't answer. So it is what it is. Let a couple weeks go by, you know, a couple months go by. Some stuff happens and there's like, you know, we got COVID and time passes. So I decided to call him again. Finally, he answers the phone after time goes by. And I wasn't expecting him to answer the phone because I, like, why would I? And I said, hey, I don't know if you remember me, but I met you about 10 years ago and you wanted to sell me a guitar. And he was like, yeah, I do remember you. I still have that guitar. So I was shocked. because there's no way that he still had it after all this
time. Yeah, no kidding.
So I went to his house, and I spent, I don't know, 3 hours with the guy. And he was just telling me all about how he used to be in a polka band in Italy, and he used to play with this guitar, and he gave me a CD, which was cool, and it's all in Italian, and, you know.
Wow.
And he told me that he had a friend of his who was a Guild employee, refinished the guitar sometime in, like, 1985, 1986, and just, like, all the history, even though it was a modified guitar, all the history was documented. And I was obviously older, and I had a little bit more money, so I finally was able to pay him what it was worth. And I left, and I went home. Couple weeks go by, and my grandfather comes over, and he sees the guitar hanging up on my wall, and he goes, wait a second, I know that guitar. He goes, how do you know Filippo? And I am shocked. I have no idea that he knows Filippo. This is totally out of nowhere. There's no reason he should know him. And I was like, how do you know him? So he goes, Filippo and I used to be in a band in Italy in around 1966, 1967.
Holy cow.
And that was the guitar that he used to play.
Oh, man.
Like, are you kidding me? So I fell in love with this guitar. I went through a little bit of a restoration process with it. I had to rewind the neck pickup, and, you know, I had to get some proper bits and pieces for it. Finally, I got the guitar in shape, and we're gearing up to play our first King Falcon show. The morning of the first King Falcon show, I find out that Filippo passed, which is crazy that my whole relationship with him was from my first gig with James all the way through my first gig with King Falcon.
Wow.
And it's kind of neat bookmarks. Obviously a very sad end to the story, but I will say, yeah. I mean, he was, I think he was 95 years old, and he lived a very long life of music. And if there's any way to go, that's how I'd want to go. So.
Yeah, but what a cool story. I mean, in knowing, you know, you say a sad end, but of course, you know, he did live a full life. And I think even more than that, I mean, that guitar was destined to be in your hands, wasn't it?
Yeah, I will say I did have a tough time at that first show. The first King Falcon show was not very good because I found the news out just a couple hours before we went on. And I told myself, I'm like, man, this is going to be such a good show because I'm going to play it in his honor, you know. And then I went out there and I just felt so bad. And the very first King Falcon show actually wasn't that good.
Wow.
It was tough, you know, it was a tough thing to just get over.
Yeah.
So I kind of had considered him a friend at that point, but.
Well, absolutely. I mean, and again, you know, to think that he had that guitar for all those years, you get it. And a couple of weeks later, he's gone. I mean, it was meant to be, there's no question. But Mike, I have to ask you, you know, when you're not singing, playing and songwriting, I know this is your life, man, but what do you do to relax and have fun? Have you got any fun hobbies?
Sure. So I don't know if I would call it relaxing, but I'm a big car guy. And anybody who is a car guy and works on cars would not call it relaxing.
Right.
It's actually the biggest pain that you could possibly imagine. Like just today, I spent the last week getting my car in shape for the weekend because it was going to be the last nice weekend. And then we're going to go on this tour and I was going to be home for a couple days. Friday morning, I go out and pop a tire. And I can't get a tire until this morning. So finally, after the whole weekend's gone, I go and I get my new tires on, and I find out that two of my wheels are bent. So, you know, I've just got it parked in the driveway, and I don't even want to look at it right now. But my car is another sentimental thing as well. So I was born in the year 1999.
Okay.
And in 1999, my dad, fresh with a newborn, thought it was a great idea to go out and buy a Mustang.
Mm.
Right? Normally, when you have a kid, you go out and you buy a minivan. And
sure.
Whatever. Nope. He's like, I had a kid. Buying a Mustang, that's it. So I've got pictures of me in this car when I was a little baby. And at some point in around, I think 2005, 2006, my dad wanted to sell it. And I told him, I was like, you can't sell that car. That car's my birthright. So now I'm saddled with it and all of its issues because I asked for it as a kid. But I love it because that's the kind of thing that you can't buy with money. You know,
it's a fact.
You can't buy a Polaroid of yourself in a car when you're a little kid. So that one day you can pass it on to your kid and say, hey, this was me when I was your age in the car. You can't buy that no matter how much money you spend on a fancy car. So even though there are faster cars and there are cooler cars, I do like the car that I have. And it's the sentimentality, even though it's constantly a pain and it's always broken no matter what I do. But that's the nature of old cars.
Yeah, absolutely. I wanted to ask you, because I interviewed another of John's clients recently, Have you bumped elbows with Gideon King at all while you're touring around in the New York City area?
I have not, unfortunately.
Okay. That's a guy you need to talk to. If you want to pick up some new chops and learn some new stuff, man, this guy had a wonderful interview with him. And if you go to our page, it's a two-part interview, which, by the way, yours is going to be two parts also because we've talked so much. But that's okay because you've got so many cool stories to tell. I don't want to just wrap it up and walk away when there's so much on the table here.
Thank you, man. I'm flattered. Usually people tell me I talk too much.
No. You know, 90% of the time when I get on and I do an interview, especially with a younger guy, I'm thinking, God, I hope he talks. And that was my thought going into this. And you've just blown me right out of my chair, and I'm enjoying every minute of it.
Well, you've given me some easy topics. I mean, it's very easy for me to talk about myself, guitars, sure, and now cars. I mean, that's my comfort zone, baby.
Yeah. I want to flip the page, though, and have you talk about the process of working on your CD. You got paired up with producer Marshall Altman and a 12-time Grammy-nominated Mark Needham, who worked with, among others, Fleetwood Mac, who, by the way, if you didn't know, started off in the blues. But he did your mixing for the album, and I'd like you to talk just a little bit about that experience.
Well, now you've opened up the Peter Green era.
Come on,
Mac,
baby.
So we got to address that a little
Bring
bit.
Bring it.
I mean, that, for me, I like Stevie Nicks and Christy McVie and all that stuff, but the Peter Green stuff, like Green Man Alishi, like Oh Well, you know, like Black Magic Woman, like all that stuff was way cooler than later Fleetwood Mac. And it's just amazing to me how they're two completely separate bands.
All
they do is, I mean, they share a drummer and I guess the bass player.
Yep.
But they're completely separate identities. And most people who are Fleetwood Mac fans have no awareness of the Peter Green era.
You're talking about one right now. Seriously. I had no clue. And a friend of mine came back and he gave me a CD to listen to. And he says, give this a listen. And I went, it's Fleetwood Mac. But I don't recognize it. It's just guys. There's no girls. And it's like, he said, just go listen to it. And before it was all done, I bought that CD. There was a 3-CD set called, I think, Before the Beginning. Wow. I can't believe
now,
that they...
Have you got into Peter Green's solo stuff as well? It's also pretty solid.
I have not yet, but I'm working on it. And it was that was the other part of the story that he told me I needed to look into is some of Peter Green's solo work.
Oh, especially as a blues man. I mean, he's one of the OGs.
Mm-hmm. That's a fact. Now,
well, anyway, so
go ahead.
We can go down that rabbit hole for sure. But I mean, to answer your original question, so one thing that we wanted to do with this record is we wanted to really explore kind of different sounds and different ways that we can interpret King Falcon. So, you know, because this is our first record. I mean, this is our introduction to the world. So before we started writing this, all we had was Shake, Shake, Shake and When the Party's Over. And those are two very different songs. And I think they sound like King Falcon for sure. But, you know, if you hear the record is kind of completely different from those two. So I think with those two, we were trying to take guesses as to what we thought King Falcon should sound like. And over the course of writing 50 more songs, we found 11 of the 50 that we all sat in a room and thought, that's what King Falcon should sound like. And that's kind of what we did for this record. So the other 39 songs are, some of them are kind of King Falcon-y, just maybe not as good. And others are completely different things. I mean, we've got one that's got like saxophones and horns and stuff. It's kind of like a ska song.
No, okay.
We've got one that's a little bit more on the active rock side. By the way, James is a saxophone player.
Okay.
He was first chair saxophone in high school, and he's a very talented young chap.
Wow.
So I wanted to use that because I'm a Steely Dan fan. So anytime you give me also as a Pink Floyd fan, anytime you give me a chance to use saxophone, I'm going to see if I can sneak it in there. but, you know, the saxophone sound is a little bit older than I think we were going for. Like, we wanted King Falcon to sound obviously young and hip because we're young dudes. You know,
right,
what I mean,
right.
Even though I listen to old guy music, and that's maybe my knee jerk reaction is to write stuff that sounds very classic. You know, with the genre that we're trying to be in, we have to keep it very modern and we have to keep it very fresh. And I think one thing that we wanted to do on this record is really have it be melody driven, have it be hook driven, and just kind of have moments of taking a diversion and kind of into the musicianship. So you'll notice, I mean, the solos on this record, I think a lot of them are you know, they're very modal, and it's not just straight pentatonic stuff, but they're not 3 minute long solos. I mean, I'm not like getting lost in guitar land.
Sure.
Now, when we do the stuff live, we kind of do that a little bit more. So, I mean, Set Me Free on the record is 2 minutes and 50 seconds. Live, we had 6.5 minutes. I mean,
there
we
just
cook on that song. So that's one cool thing that we're able to do. But again, our first introduction into the world, our first record, we wanted to make sure that we had the basics and the fundamentals down, the songwriting, the melody, the hooks. And we're already cooking up the second record, and I think the second record is going to be the one that we take even more risks on, which I'm excited about.
Nice. Now, Mike, where do you see King Falcon in 5 years, and what determines success for this band in your mind?
If we get a nicer van, I would be stoked. that's really the biggest thing. But no. I mean, you know, we're looking at doing some festivals next year, which is going to be great.
Nice.
Which we haven't been able to do for some time. And this will be our first year as King Falcon doing festivals. We were excited to be on a bigger tour, which kind of fell through. I mean, I was talking to you about that earlier. We won't go too much into that, but I'm sure next year we'll be booking something, and next year I'd love to go to Europe. So we're looking at maybe going to Amsterdam, because that's where the label is, maybe going to England, because they're very big on rock and roll. So I know your original question was 5 years. 5 years from now, I'd love to be literally I'd love to have a bigger van, because the size of your van determines how well you're doing. You know, because whenever you're at a festival and you see the guys come in and they got the big buses with the blacked out windows, you know they're doing all right.
And
we're not there yet. We got a Sprinter, and I bought it used, so that's why it's always broken. But when we get there, I'll know that we got there.
There you go. I wanted to ask you. I've tried to ask everybody that I've interviewed in the last 6 months to go back and think about the time during COVID, because that really changed the dynamic of everything related to music and public activity and concerts and different things like that. How did that affect you? I mean, was that something that gave you inspiration to write more, to create more? How did you handle that period of time?
Sure. COVID was pretty pivotal for us, actually. And I think before COVID, we were maybe rushing into doing live shows prematurely. We had Shake, and we were kind of in the middle of writing When the Party Is Over. And we had a couple other demos that we were working on, which ended up not making the record. And that was our whole set list. It was only 5 songs that we had written, because the band had only existed for a few months. Our first show was supposed to be April 1st, 2020. And it got canceled, obviously, because that's kind of when COVID started.
Oh, yeah.
So at first, it was looking pretty bleak, because again, we're a new band, we just started up, and now there's this indefinite black cloud that's just looming over the entire industry.
Yeah.
So we don't know where the end of it's going to be. We don't know if we're going to be able to gig again. So at first it was all doom and gloom, but I think at some point when we realized that it was going to be a little bit longer than everybody had anticipated, we decided that we had to use the time to really nail down the identity of the band and write those 50 songs that we could take 11 out of. So I think it was fully because of COVID that we had a chance to nail down the album and to nail down a record deal. Check this out. This is something I tell everybody, and they have a hard time believing. So we signed a record deal. We recorded the whole album, mixed and mastered, and then we shook hands with our first people at the record label.
Wow.
After everything was done. After the album was recorded was the first time that they saw us play live, which was super scary, because in our mind, they've just been listening to the mixed and mastered perfect album for the last however many weeks, and now they're going to see us live. They clearly have an expectation of what we're going to sound like. And obviously we're still here, and they didn't unsign us, so we sounded good enough. But, you know, the fear before of like, we haven't proven ourselves yet, and we're already knee deep in this thing.
Yeah.
And they only did that because, again, nobody knew when the end of COVID was going to be, and labels still had to sign people, but people were dropping dead like flies. So what do you do? You know, do you let the business go under by not signing anybody, or do you take a risk on something and kind of hope it works out just based on word of mouth? And for us, the real deciding factor was when we sent them the video for When the Party Is Over. We sent them the music video for When the Party Is Over. 2 days later, we had a contract. And the only reason we were able to shoot the video for When the Party Is Over is because New York City was so empty because of COVID. A lot of those shots, those streets, if you go there now, are packed 24 hours a day. So we went out in the middle of the night and we took all those shots. But in the middle of the night in New York is usually pretty busy, except during COVID. It was like a ghost town. I mean, businesses were just closed. I was like waiting for tumbleweeds.
Yeah, kind of reminds me of pictures that I saw of Chicago at the same time. I mean, it was just
like
a ghost town. And I can even locally, you know, going into the city of Lansing, I live just outside of Lansing, Michigan. And the roads back then, I was the guy that went out because I had two of my three kids here and their significant others. And a couple of other, I had my nephew here. I had a friend that was renting a room and my husband was here. And I was the guy that went out and did the shopping. And boy, when I go into the grocery store and there's just a handful of people.
Yeah, you're like a soldier going out into the war zone.
Yeah, it was a really, really weird feeling. But Mike, we're getting close to the end here, and I've got to ask you another question, one more if you can. It's probably going to be the toughest of the lot. But if you could open for one band, past or present, who would it be and why?
Wow, yeah, I don't know if I was prepared for that question. That's a tough one. I might have to think of both.
Okay.
It might have to be one past and one present. And it's tough because I have to make a decision between what I think King Falcon would fit best with and who personally I would just want to see.
Sure.
Those are kind of different. Like for me personally, I would want to see Diana Ross.
Okay.
But that's not – I mean, that we would be a horrible opener for King Falcon. People would just boo us. It would be terrible. but I would love to say that I played with Diana Ross. It would be awesome.
Right.
I don't know, man. I think a modern band would have to be somebody like Tame Impala, because I think our sounds are a little bit different. But Tame Impala was just such a huge influence on me, kind of all throughout Kevin Parker's career, even with Pond, but particularly the Currents album. And I know I'm like the 8 millionth person to say it, but it was just the first modern album that I've heard, which was perfect cover to cover. So I think he would be a guy I'd love to open for. Also, I think Radiohead would be cool.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, a classic band. As long as it's not U2, I'm okay. Any other band.
Okay.
As long as it's not U2. Any other band.
Right. Michael, as we wrap up here, I have to ask and give you an opportunity to put your shingle out there. Where can we find out more about your band, buy some merch, maybe even book your band for a gig?
Sure. So we've got all the regular social media. So Instagram, we've got a Facebook, we've got a TikTok, we've got, all the Twitter, we've got all that stuff. You can follow us on anything. If you want to buy some merch, which would be great, you can get it on our website, kingfalconband.com. We just got a whole bunch of very fresh new t-shirts. And the cool thing about reaching out to us, especially if you do it on our Instagram, you reach out to one of the guys in the band directly. So if somebody texts you back on the King Falcon Instagram, it's probably me, James, or Tom.
Nice, nice. Well, listen, this wraps up this edition of Time Signatures with Jim Irvin. Many thanks to our guest, Mike Rubin, and most of all to you, our listener. As we bring this episode to a close, please remember that our goal is to keep the blues alive, but preserving the history of the blues one story at a time is our mission. We'll see you soon right here on Time Signatures.
This has been Time Signatures with Jim Irvin, presented by the Capital Area Blues Society in Lansing, Michigan. For more information on cabs, visit capitalareablues.org. You can find this episode and past episodes at lccconnect.org. The Time Signatures theme song, Michigan Roads, is used by permission and was written by Root Doctor, featuring Freddie Cunningham.
You know I'm trying, trying, baby, diving up in
Until next time, keep on keeping the blues alive.